I've always been a passive kind of person. It is both my worst quality and the thing people like most about me.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast that brings you all the reviews and recommendations of BookTok's most popular books and tells you whether or not you should take the time out of your busy schedule to read them. I'm Catherine.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Caitlin. And you have probably seen today's book, most definitely, out on maybe even Bookstagram. It's kind of trendy. It was a GMA Book Club pick. Today, we are going to be talking about The Compound by Aisling Rowe. It's been described as Love Island meets Lord of the Flies. I think that's a little generous, but essentially all these rich, beautiful people are sent to this place called The Compound, and they have to stay paired up in a couple of with the opposite sex to stay in the compound. And there are tasks they must do to earn rewards to better the compound or get personal, you know, rewards, brands, sort of things. And some of the tasks are simple and some are a little bit sinister, and slowly people get eliminated. And the goal is to be the last person in the compound. And so our main character, Lily, enters the compound and we follow her journey.
It all televised live to the American people.
Most, but doing the least.
Yeah. All right. We ready for reviews?
Yeah. I have a 1-star review from Goodreads, and it just says dystopian Love Island, but it sucks.
Go ahead.
How about 4.75? It says cultural satire. We're also living in a state of constant surveillance where we're rewarded for humiliating ourselves and hurting each other. Heart hands.
Period. Yeah. I have a 1-star review that just kind of made me laugh. It said this could have been an email.
Yep. I saw that one.
Okay. And then there's another one that I just screenshotted, like, just for me, because I recommend this book all the time. And it says, if someone recommends you this book, run.
Remind yourself that, Casey.
Yeah.
No comment. Well, this book, as Caitlin kind of mentioned, has really kind of done the circuit, I would say, as far as famous popular books go. It was also a Goodreads Choice Awards contestant in the sci-fi genre. I'm not sure if it won or not, but the overall Goodreads rating of the book is 3.53 out of 5. The Fable rating is 3.5 out of 5. And the Storygraph rating is 3.71 out of 5. What did you guys think?
I came out with a 3-star review. Concept was interesting. I was intrigued by the idea of Love Island meets a compound full of beautiful people expected to survive, like Survivor meets Love Island, but also like more sinister. I don't know if it actually executed that vision to its fullest extent. And the ending bored me, and I just kind of like lost interest about halfway through. So it's a 3-star for concept and concept only.
I will go next because I accidentally saw Casey's review. I also settled on 3 stars. A third of the way into the book, I was telling everybody I saw to read this book. It was so interesting. I was obsessed. Yes, I have, like, 2 years ago, got into watching Love Island. I'm a Love Island fan. It's very like the Truman Show vibes. I was so excited, but as more people left the compound, it actually got less interesting, and I thought it would be like a little more sinister than it actually was. So I was kind of expecting a little more Suzanne Collins kind of ish and didn't get it. So based on like the ending and just how I kind of like Catherine lost interest after the halfway mark a little bit, it's a 3. I did not mad I read it. It's like a high 3, but I expected more.
Very interesting. I gave this book 5 stars. This is probably my favorite book I've read this year so far. I'm obsessed with it. I think part of it is that I am a big Love Island fan. And during the pandemic, me and my roommates watched every season of British Love Island that was out at the time. And so I think the book did like a genuinely excellent job of capturing the atmosphere of Love Island. I know one of the critiques of the book that I saw on the reviews was that it's boring, but Love Island is kind of boring. So to me, I felt like I was really into the atmosphere of things being kind of a lull. I just loved it. I'm surprised to hear the comments about the ending, because the ending, like, I was glued. I mean, to be fair, I was glued to this entire book. I read it, and I think one day I was so like drawn into the story and obsessed with it and obsessed with finding out what would happen. And I thought the ending was really crazy. Like, I was on the edge of my seat. I felt anxious the whole time. Like, I could not. The final character made me so anxious. I felt like I never knew exactly what he was going to do. And I thought the consumerism commentary was really well done. Like, both the commentary on like literal consumerism of items, but also people viewing themselves as consumeristic materials and even their identity being a subject of consumerism that people have to buy into. And I think Love Island is like low-key kind of a fucked up show. Oh, yeah. I still love it.
Oh, yeah.
And I still watch it. And I think the book really did like connect and elevate the things that I've often thought and felt about kind of the darker side of Love Island. So, yeah, I loved it. Like, no critiques.
I think it's interesting because in my mind, I thought it was going to get darker as well. So I agree with Caitlin 100%, where I was left hanging almost because I was expecting it to turn into a horror movie. And it didn't.
I wanted it to turn into
exactly like I was expecting that and was looking forward to that and more of a twist, and it just left me hanging. But I love the concept, and I agree, like the thoughts on consumerism and people as a commodity is very, very interesting. Like, the concept is a very good concept. I just don't think it was as well executed in the sense of like a climactic ending.
That's so I get the ending. I understand it. It just wasn't for me.
I also think, I don't know, one of my things that I love as a horror reader, which I love the genre of horror and thrillers. Well, not really thrillers, more horror, but anyway, not important. I think the threat of violence and the implication of violence is often scarier than violence. So maybe that's just like a personal thing. And this book does a lot, I think, of like portrayals of very subtle maneuvering, particularly by men, to make themselves threatening without actually committing acts of violence. And so that was something that I really enjoyed reading, because I felt like it was like very subtle and interesting and also very scary to me, because you never know when that violence will actually erupt and happen. But I get it. If you were expecting something even harsher, you know, it definitely stopped short of what it could have done.
Yeah, I just expected more of a twist.
Yeah, I would say there's not really a surprise ending, more so just like a continuing development until the story is over.
Yeah, like I don't even think there's really a twist, really.
No, I wouldn't.
Well, like,
say
you know, just based on how it starts, like you're going to see the whole show through to the end. So you already know. Essentially, right. It makes it to the end.
But this book is essentially post-war America.
Yeah, it sort of snuck that in there, too, which I was like, where? I need more.
Yeah, I needed more of that backstory.
So me, in this book, like, I love, like, a post-apocalypse society that you have to kind of ferret out all the weird lore. So I just loved it. I loved that part of it. I loved that it wasn't the focus of the book. And I agree that it couldn't be more present in the book, because these reality shows kind of always do politics this way, where it's very subtly implied and they're not actually supposed to like say things outright. So I think that part of it was just a little bit more realistic to the concept of reality show. But I liked what was in there, and I love that kind of story, like post-apocalypse dystopian society. So I was 10 toes down for this.
Allowed.
Okay. Well, is the book more plot or character driven? The reality show in the book is not like exactly Love Island. There's only one winner, but there is this sort of like romantic pairing that is expected through most of the show. But eventually, through competition and voting people off, only one contestant wins, and they essentially have to, at the very end of the show, outlast other contestants and win like physical challenges. So that's just the actual like show part of the book,
which makes it more plot driven, I think.
I would argue this is character.
Yeah.
I think the reality show element is the what pushes the story along. Like, it's definitely forms like the outline of the plot. But I think the plot is more so how the main character decides to continue on.
Fair enough.
And why she makes those decisions and why she kind of aligns herself with the people that she does. I think it's a lot more about her strategy, and her strategy essentially being like an empty husk of a human.
Yeah. I'm like, I was 50-50 anyway. So like, you convinced me back to character driven.
Yeah. The only fight I'll win today. I'll take it.
I agree. That's,
yeah. Sorry.
I don't think we're going to fight. I just think we like different things.
It yeah, like I don't feel strongly about this book. That's why it's a 3 stars.
This breaks my heart, though, because I loved it so much that I'm just like so enthusiastic. Like,
well, great. You'll lead this discussion. Great.
Yeah, you be enthusiastic and we'll just be here. No. like I said, I didn't dislike the book. I'm not mad I read it. I just wanted more.
And I mean, I guess we'll get into it into like our busy girl ratings, but it's like, and this is our next question is like one of our next questions is about pacing and how long it took you to read. It's only like a less than 300 page book. So it's a very quick read in that sense. So, I mean, I'm not mad I read it because it was interesting. I'd have an issue.
It was short. It was just less. It started off way more interesting and slowly. Because you lost people. So to me, it just got, I don't know, slightly less interesting, but the pace was still good to me.
Yeah.
I listened on audiobook. Maybe that changes my experience a little bit. It was read in a British accent, which was lovely.
Oh. It was written kind of British, too.
Like, it was written far more like Love Island UK than Love Island US also. Yeah.
They were using words that were more British.
They were kind of about that. Jumpers and things, vests. So
it might not have been post-war America. It might have been post-war Britain.
Post-war Britain. She's from, the author's from Ireland.
So yeah, post-war UK.
Yeah. I figured with the name, because it's pronounced Aisling according to the audiobook, but it's A-I-S-L-I-N-G. So that's like some sort of Gaelic for sure.
Right. Okay. Well, we can just finish the pacing question now since we're on it. I do agree that there are slow moments in the story. Again, I found them worth it partly because I've watched the Love Island franchise. And so I understood what she was kind of doing with those moments and the way she was mirroring the real show. However, I do understand why not every reader might like enjoy those parts as much. But I think that the book is the right length for the story. You're not really wasting time because it's just a short enough book that it's kind of worth it.
See, look, we didn't argue.
Nope.
But y'all know I like to argue. Okay. So the next question is, have you or would you read other books by the author? I think this is her debut novel.
I think it is.
That makes sense.
I'd be intrigued. Like, I didn't mind the writing. I'd need a more exciting character, but I think, I mean, that was the point in this book, so.
Right.
Yeah.
And my answer is obvious. I would obviously love to.
I would be curious. Depends on what her next book is.
I'd say this makes me very optimistic that her future books will be even better. Because this book was good. I mean, I really loved it. And I thought the concept was very unique and cool. And I think sometimes with new writers, it's more important to judge the concept in the book. Because they're figuring it out, you know, maybe she'll write a more, I don't know, action-packed, insane axe murderer book after this.
I mean, I also enjoyed how relevant it is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, if she wrote something else culturally relevant like this, it'd be fun.
Yeah, I think she built a good world. So that's always a good test mm-hmm. of whether or not you're a good writer.
She is one of the authors I thought of when we were talking about Yesteryear and how I liked the concept of Yesteryear so much that I kind of wanted other authors to do their spin on it. She was one of the first authors I thought of because I would love to see her take on that concept, especially given that the compound is kind of similarly feeding into this like capitalist performance theme that was so important in Yesteryear.
Yeah. Well, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, I agree.
I also, you know, I wouldn't be mad to see someone else's take on this concept, too. Like, it's just
I wouldn't be mad either.
Yeah. It's a unique, clever concept.
Yeah, totally. I mean, all of these, like, dystopian books, I think, are generally interesting. Like, even, oh my gosh, I just forgot. Lord of the Flies. Like, even Lord of the Flies, like, I feel like this is sort of her modern remake of Lord of the Flies. I would even like to see different takes of Lord of the Flies. I would love to see different takes of this book. It's just so interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, would you watch a movie or TV show of the book?
Yes. It was written, I mean, just listening to the audiobook, I was like, this would be such an interesting movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily need Lily's inner monologue because it's honestly quite boring.
It's vapid.
Yeah. So, like, you could make it all happen easily.
Right.
It'd be cool.
I agree. It would be cool. And you could definitely bring out some of the more, like, suspenseful aspects and some of the, like, one of the elements of horror in the book is that the compound itself is very isolated and the contestants all grow to really fear the desert around the compound. And the men in the group and the people who have been like banished for whatever reason seem to have these really harrowing experiences of survival in the desert. And that's an element of the book I think would be particularly good translated to screen.
I agree. Just same. The sheer emptiness surrounding it.
Yeah, isolationist.
Like, Love Island is isolated, however. Actually, yeah. Fun fact, I recently learned it. Love Island US films so close to Survivor that sometimes Survivor hears the Love Island parties.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah, amazing. Which is crazy to me.
Amazing.
Yeah, two shows with just completely different theses.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, well, busy girl rating.
I'll bump mine up to a 4 because I do think it's an easy book to pick up and put down and read. It's not a perfect book, I don't think. If you don't have any interest in reality television and have no like basis or thought behind it, then it's probably going to be hard to read this book because you have to have a degree of reality TV knowledge in order to fully appreciate this book. And while I'm not an avid Love Island viewer, I have watched it, so like I'm aware of it. So I'll give it a 4.
I will also give it a 4. And I think it's an easy read. I think a lot of people could enjoy it. I just, like I said before, there's nothing wrong with the pacing. It's well paced. It just started off way more interesting, in my opinion. Like, setting the groundwork was far more fun. And so I think it lost some of the fun, you know, partway through. So that's the reason I can't give it like a 5.
Okay, fair points. I am going to stick with my 5. I think it's short, it's easy to read, it's super culturally relevant right now. And while I don't think every person who reads this book will enjoy it, I think every person who finishes it will get something from it. And so I think that for a short, easy to read story, that makes it a 5.
That's actually one of my critiques, is I expected a little more out of it. Like, yes. I wanted to get more from the message.
Same.
Anyway, we'll talk about that. Because okay. It is that time anyway.
Spoiler alert!
Spoiler alert section. This is where, if you don't want to know how it ends because you're going to read it, pause, come back later, because we're going to spoil everything now.
Yes, I'm so excited to spoil everything.
Go ahead, Casey.
I really don't have a rant about this one because I loved it so much. I'm like, I have nothing to say other than perfection. I
also don't have a rant.
Same.
This may be more of a boring discussion outside of the themes.
Yeah.
It's not going to be arguing.
No.
Well, okay. Our first question up is, what did you think of the setting of the book and its premise of Love Island meets survival show?
Love.
Yeah, it's a great premise. I mean, the concept gives it 3 stars just right off the bat. I think it's interesting to combine it with, like, you have to commute, like everyone has to participate in tasks in order to get the rewards. And the rewards are not necessarily beneficial to you. They're beneficial maybe to one person, and they're not exactly what you need, but it is like, the more you sell it and the more you invest in it, the bigger the reward becomes.
The reward benefits no one, but you know you need to keep doing these freaking tasks until you get like food.
Yeah, like that was the horror part of it, is that like everyone's like, they're not going to let us starve. And I'm like, it sounds like they're going to let you starve.
Yeah.
And they do, by the way.
Spoiler alert, they do.
Yeah. I also love the premise. It's interesting to me that you guys didn't find it super horror, because to me, I just felt like I was so on the edge of my seat, so waiting what was going to happen the whole time, because I
found
was like
it more horror at the beginning when things like food were being deprived. I found it less horror when it was the other two humans that I was like, meh.
Dude, when Cain like punches her in the face and she locks him outside, when that's his like greatest fear, I was like, I'm going to lose my shit. Like
Tom.
What's his name?
Tom.
What did I say?
Cain. Who the hell is Cain?
I don't know. I read this book so long ago, I'm obviously forgetting their names. Tom, yes. Excuse me.
Here's my rant about Tom.
Okay.
I expected more out of him for who he was depicted to be as this villain character and as this like terrible man who is okay with beating women and like is doing anything necessary to win. I thought, because they kept mentioning this bone that he got from the dog that he killed, I thought he killed the other contestant and it was a human bone he was lugging around this whole time. That was my thought that came through. And so I thought it was going to be like, oh no, he's a murderer and they let a murderer into this house. So I was, it was kind of a lackluster ending for him when that didn't happen. And it was just truly a wild dog that attacked him.
He just got blind and left.
Yeah.
Well, he did fight. I thought the implication was more so he fought that one guy and then they never figured out what happened to him. So it's kind of unclear what actually happened.
They said the one guy wandered off and never came back.
Yeah.
I assumed wandered off and never came back and he met Tom.
I think it's sinister still to think that that guy could have died anyway due to the show.
Yeah, because to me, the ultimate villain is not actually supposed to be Tom. The ultimate villain is the show and the American public who watch it. Like, the show is willing to let them fight borderline to the death. It is willing to excuse physical violence. It's willing to starve these people out. Like, it's willing to create situations where they are all in extreme harm. Like, Andrew will never be the same after this show. It doesn't really matter that he's alive. Like, he's endured such intense psychological trauma that he will never recover. Mm-hmm. And so to me, the horror isn't just like Tom. The horror is how far will the show allow them to go?
But it's also the horror of how far will the people let themselves go?
Right.
But I Tom thought the end was just left for because it was the people. I thought it was more sinister when it's the show, is what I'm saying. And yes, it was sort of the show at the end, but like not really. It was far more Lily and Tom and Lily and Andrew.
Yeah.
But to me, that's still the show because they were just not interfering. Like, they were just allowing them to sit in that space where they were like borderline dead. Like, that's horrifying. And people are watching this and it's just acceptable. Like, that's how far society has gone, that we can just watch people punch each other and starve each other out and no one will intercede.
I mean, they started to.
Kind of. And I liked that part of the show became, can you like manipulate or outlast the showrunners?
Yeah. It's, they were just there.
Right. And it is like a test, right? Like, because part of what I felt like did keep Tom in check is he knew he would not be allowed to win if he crossed a certain line. Like, the showrunners would interfere the same way they actually tried to stop Lily from winning. They would do to him if he took the violence too far, because then he would be unpopular.
Mm-hmm. And but so it's like the fact that he made it that far popular and violent was scary.
Oh, I thought it was pretty scary. People liked him. Yeah. Yeah. It's horrifying. It's scary. And also, like, I just was never sure how far he would go. And that tension was enough to make it scary to me. I didn't need the actual violence to occur.
Well, it also made you wonder if he was one of these, like, because she kept bringing up, I wonder if any of these boys have been in the war. And so I think Tom probably, he says he wasn't, but, you know, he has like this kind of PTSD response that, like, maybe he was before he did finance stuff. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I liked the idea of this war, but I wanted more war. Like, I wanted more, like, talk about it and more fleshing out of it. I get it because it was a reality TV show, and reality TV shows are very, like, glossed over politically and you don't talk about politics. But they're talking about these brush fires out in the desert and that they all have shitty lives and that there was this war. And I'm like, excuse me, what? I'm going to need a little bit more here.
The most we get is from Ryan, who's like, both my brothers died in the war, so I came here, which was also crazy.
I think, again, I just didn't end up needing that much from it, especially because I thought the book had a good excuse, like not a cop-out excuse, but like a decent excuse. Because I think it does explain to why the extent of the materialism on the show was to the point that people were willing to starve for it. Because there had been a war and people weren't doing well and people had nothing to live for, but they also like were not rich necessarily and like really craved. Part of the villa experience in this book is not just that people crave the material wealth, even though they do, they also just crave an escape from the kind of war-torn society that they live in.
The monotony of life.
Yeah, and the fact that things are bad. Like, like Lily talks about how she works like a shitty job. She can't afford anything. and how like her dad disappeared in the war, essentially. She has no idea where he is. And so,
okay, I'm sorry. That was the other thing, is you think she's just this dead end job, blah, blah, blah. And then you get to the end and it's like, actually, no, Lily's too stupid to do any other job. And I was like, why is this the end?
Yeah.
She's bad at math. It's some Feyre type shit. Like, what is happening?
I do.
She had to do a math problem to win.
I do agree. Well, I think that's kind of funny. I also do think, like, to be frank, a lot of the people on these shows are kind of dumb. Like, not all of them are dumb. Not everyone who participates in reality TV is dumb. But
it just felt like that knowledge dropped at the very end so that her final thing could be a math problem was like, really? I don't know. I didn't like it personally.
But a lot of times. I feel like the fact that she can't really do math, she thinks about, but regardless, she is a vapid and empty person, which I think is the right choice for the book. But then the book is also limited by Lily's perspective, which is going to be vapid and empty. So then you kind of run into a problem.
The most interesting part was when she was like kind of a lesbian.
Yes.
Yeah, she's bisexual.
Yeah.
Bisexual. The sexual tension between her and Candace was better than any other sexual tension.
Yes.
Right. Which also very much exists in Love Island. And it is something that's being talked about constantly with the current Love Island season between two of the men.
Yep. I don't know. I thought we just need an all bisexual Love Island. It could be crazy.
Yes. That's how I feel.
And just coupling up is coupling up.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely insane.
Anyway, I do agree with some of y'all's critiques of the ending. There was a point where I was kind of like, okay, girl, like, where are we going here? But ultimately I was pleased that even though Lily is kind of dumb, she basically won because of her wits and because she was able to form a plan that
she was socially smart.
She was like the quote that you read at the beginning, her passivity really helped her because she's really good at reading a room and reading people and knowing what people want from her in order to get what she wants, which I think is a different kind of IQ and a different kind of smarts, and it serves you better in these kind of situations where you can sit back, watch the show unfold, and then insert yourself in the moments that will best benefit you, which I thought was very interesting. Like
playing dumb.
Yeah.
Served her right.
Yes.
And nobody thought she deserved to be there. And the whole time, that is where you get her inner monologue does benefit you. The whole time you're like, no, actually she does deserve to be there because she is far more clever than she's letting anyone else see.
Mm-hmm. And I think that there is commentary in that because I do think a lot of women on reality TV are a lot smarter than they pretend to be.
Oh, yeah.
And so it is kind of bringing in that theme of performance for the sake of others, even if it demeans you, as long as you can use it to material advantage.
I will say, I was watching last year's Love Island UK recently. One of the men genuinely didn't know what an avocado looked like and was holding up lime saying, are these avocados?
Yeah.
Genuinely no clue. And he was who I thought was one of the more like serious people on the show. And I was like, never mind.
Yeah. There is a very famous scene from one of the Love Island UK seasons where a group of the girls are sitting around talking and one of the girls says, what do you guys think about Brexit? And the girls like, don't know what Brexit is. So yeah, but the shows go out of their way to portray these people as stupid. I think one of my favorite parts of the book is that it really hammers in the fact that these shows are intended to be a humiliation ritual. And part of winning them is how much humiliation are you willing to endure? Because real Love Island is like that, where like their stupid intros and like the features of all their like dumb small talk, which makes them seem stupid, even though they're also not really allowed to talk about other stuff. And how the boredom kind of permeates because they're not allowed to do anything, but they're also not allowed to talk about anything. And so then everything just makes them look stupid because they can only do stupid stuff.
Right.
And the intention is to embarrass them. Yeah. Like the intention is to portray them as dumb.
Well, and like this is far more Love Island UK because they're Love Island US has so many challenges to make it raunchier. And Love Island UK, they're just like sitting there, just chilling, just trying to figure out what to talk about when every day is the same. Mm-hmm. When the most exciting thing is actually last season of Love Island UK, they were playing tennis with a lemon, which happened in this book.
Yep. Right, because they had earned like the court, but they hadn't earned the ball.
Right. So the art is imitating the life.
Yes. Okay. Well, who was y'all's favorite contestant?
I mean, Sam is probably my favorite, just because he was like the most sane person there. And actually gave a shit about the people around him and like cared and was like a decent human, but like honestly didn't like any of them because that's what you're supposed to. You're not supposed to like these people because they're entertainment.
Right.
I like Jacintha because she was the brains.
Yes, I love Jacintha. And right. I love the commentary behind that of being the token black person in a very mm-hmm. white space and expected to couple up with the black man because that's what you do.
Yeah, I thought the most interesting stuff kind of came from her situation. But I also ended up liking Becca a lot. Mm-hmm. Becca was a sleeper. Was like, you didn't know what you were going to get from Becca.
I agree. I grew to like Becca. A lot of the women I actually really enjoyed because I felt like their leaving the villa ended up being kind of a complicated character arc for many of them. And Sam, I have really complicated feelings about because I do feel like he ended up being one of those guys who's a good guy and then likes a woman just because she's attractive. Like, what was Sam's actual interest in Lily? And they kind of imply that they have these good conversations and that, like...
That's the thing is, didn't understand their relationship because you never heard the conversations between them once mm-hmm. their couple was solid. So it was like, why does he call her and say, I love you? Because why would you love this girl?
Right. And it made me judge him because I was like, how could an actual, like, smart, nice guy, like, enjoy... Lily
realized he wasn't actually a smart, nice guy. He was just a nice guy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I saw it as he kind of saw her and saw what she was doing. Because I think he saw through most of her game pretty quickly, where it's like the passive girl who sees everything and knows everything and is very...
He calls her on it, like, day two.
Yeah, so that's why I appreciated him, because I think he actually saw her and saw that that was a degree of smarts and intellect that other people...
Well, he was also the one playing it down, too. Like, he was the guy who should have been in charge and was playing it down.
Yes.
Right. I do agree with that to a certain extent. However, their full attachment to each other did... escape me a little bit.
I mean, I don't think it's real love.
Because to me...
I didn't understand it.
It's trauma bonding.
Right. Trauma bonding. And they do understand each other on some level. To me, the real connection, though, was the emptiness. I think that's why they actually fell in love with each other or felt like they did. Because Sam kind of confesses that his brothers die. And so he feels like he has nothing else to live for. And that's why he joins the show. And Lily is leading this very empty, unfulfilling life and wants to escape from it. And also wants to gain access to a level of material wealth she doesn't have right now.
She wants to get out of her mother's house.
It's also confusing, though, why he still calls her and says, like, I miss you, I love you. Because she chose material things over him. Easy decision for her.
Yeah. I mean, it's I feel like it's a bit of Stockholm syndrome and a bit of just like he had trouble assimilating to the outside world. So he isolated himself further. And so all he could think about was her and the villa, or not the villa, the compound. Look at me mixing.
I did that earlier too.
Yeah. So like he never actually assimilated into actual society afterwards. So he's talking to her from the perspective of him still being isolated in paradise and being like, oh, I wish you were here with me, because he's still isolated.
I did like the using him and a few other comments to talk about the mental health aspect of being on these shows and being isolated for so long and then trying to like go back. I feel like you get like a micro dose of that, you know, like summer camp without your cell phone, you know, like that kind of thing. But this is like extreme, plus you're under surveillance the whole time, like the paranoia and stuff. And how like Lily mentions offhand, she's like, no one's ever died on the show. People kill themselves after, but that's a different topic.
Yeah, like a lot of people do. It's like, oh, geez, and you still wanted to get on the show. Got it.
And it's still like it is worth it to them to knowing that to still do it.
Well, it seems like everyone on the show had a degree of suicidal ideation. Also or lack of value of their own life.
Right. The Love Island UK franchise has had multiple post-show suicides. So that was also based off of real life. I don't know. The Sam stuff, I feel like it's all just about like lack of connection, right? Like Lily was the only person he had connected with or felt he had connected with in a long time. And I feel like the phone call is partly him like needing it to be real or else he's just alone again. And in that way, I think that they might actually make it because there's just this sort of like
trauma bond.
Yeah.
Mutual trauma bond.
I mean, let's be honest, guys. That's why we're still friends.
Oh my God.
It's powerful.
Powerful. The trauma of journalism.
Going through something together. Yeah.
True.
I mean, yeah, I could see them working out solely because they're two very broken individuals that are hollow and they need each other to fill each other up. But also the fact that like no one else in the society is actually going to know what they experienced while being in there. They're like the only ones. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I could see them working out.
I think it's also like a Lily sort of learns her lesson and sort of doesn't. I think the ending sort of leaves it like ambiguous a little bit. Because her whole point of being on the show was like, again, she had a very strong need to just not be in her life anymore. But she also had this like extreme desire for possessions, which I think is very timely in like the influencer era to just be constantly advertised at and to feel like this constant craving for materials. But after she actually becomes the final contestant and gets to stay in the villa and basically ask for whatever she wants, she runs out of ideas pretty quickly and she gets bored really quickly. And part of the reason that she stays as long as she does was not the materials, but actually the dread of going back to real life.
Phone call from her mom was like the most depressing.
Yeah. Her mom's like, are you done yet?
Hey, mom, I'm going to go cook dinner. Let me know when you're home. Like it makes you realize why, she feels the way she does a little bit, but also like it was a really good depiction of like people who are struggling with depression and stuff. A lot of times the people in their lives just like totally can't tell because it manifests in other ways. Like Lily.
Right. Right. Okay. I mean, Lily is really important to the story. We see the entire thing through her eyes. And I think there's also some implications that she's not the most reliable narrator.
No.
She's very fueled by her own jealousy. What did y'all think of that and her perceptions of the other contestants?
I mean, she was sizing them up like you have to do when you go on a show like that.
Yeah.
Right.
And Mia just said it out loud was the only difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mia was the only one that was authentically being herself in a way that got her kicked off in the end. But I think Lily sized a lot of the women up through like the lens of like the patriarchy and comparison, and her being like, well, I'm the second prettiest. And so it was all about beauty and all about kind of that. And then size the men up based on some more nuanced ideas because of safety and also like vibes, which I think are fair because she got the ick from like Tom and kind of got the ick from Andrew pretty quickly. But she still wanted to impress Andrew because he was the leader.
Right. Well, it showed you that like in that environment, you choose a partner because of status and not because of genuine feeling.
No, I kind of thought, like, I knew it would come down to, like, her and Tom and probably someone else. But I kind of thought he'd end up, like, being a good guy. And, like, they'd see these things about each other and, like, have to tackle this stuff together. No, her perceptions were pretty spot on for being a pretty dim-witted girl.
She knows people.
Yeah. The one thing she didn't anticipate was the cheating. And that was kind of interesting that she managed to assess Andrew and the other women so accurately and yet was blind to the fact that there was all of this sexual stuff going on in the background. Like, it later comes out that like Andrew was hooking up with men and women on the show, which was like total news to her.
Which so, I expected Candace to be stronger. Like, she was painted as such a badass and she left because the man was cheating. I was like, girl. Anyway.
Well, the commenter on that was she left because she couldn't handle being perceived as a victim. And so her sense of control was gone. And so she left the show because of that, because she just didn't want that to be her story arc. But then it was too late to change it.
Yeah.
And I do like the kind of commentary about the way that these shows force women to think about each other too, because you just have to have a pretty blunt perception of how attractive men think you are. Like, it forces you to value and constantly think about the opinions of your male counterparts, which is a pretty negative space to have to inhabit as a woman.
Yeah. True. And you only believe what's beautiful is what you've seen tell you is beautiful. So
yeah, it's societal.
But she did say things like, if they were rated Jacinta 6, like, I must not be beautiful at all. Like, she, but she only placed the beauty value on the people she was friends with. Like, she saw her friends as more beautiful.
I also did feel, we mentioned this kind of earlier, that Jacinta was one of the most interesting characters in the villa and definitely like the most likable. But I thought that the friendship element was interesting because...
Well, you realize they're not actually friends.
Right. And also I feel like the implication of the story was that if Lily had been able to more accurately assess value in relationships, like outside of other people's perceptions, but like inherent value in like real human connection, she would have valued Jacinta higher and would have made different decisions and like maybe been able to form like a real friendship that would have actually healed her.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, she's never quite able to break free from forming relationships exclusively for the outside perception of them and aligning herself with status. And that emphasizes and continues her emptiness.
Right. I just found Jacinta interesting because all these people came here to, and Ryan, to escape, to not do work, to just be there. But the funny thing about the show is you do have to do work to not live in squalor. And Jacinta's like fixing stuff, engineering things. Ryan's like growing food with her. Like, that's why I found her the most interesting, because like, why was she there? You know, like,
yeah,
if you're going there to just not do anything, you're doing stuff.
Right. I do think it does. Like, they still definitely had to work a lot, and you could see pretty early who was a more effective worker and not. But I think, like, the work on a show like this is a bit easier and simple than work in real life. Like,
I don't know. When have I ever had to build a door from scratch?
So I don't mean simple as in easy. I mean, just like,
oh, it's like survival. It's not like entering numbers in a computer.
Yeah, it's step one, step two kind of tasks, not like complex critical thinking skills.
More gratifying because it increases your comfort.
Yeah. Right. Like, the compound's purpose was almost that it allowed contestants for a time to pause existentialism. But then that question of, like, what am I doing here? What is my purpose? Is, like, ultimately the reason a lot of people leave, because they just can't figure out what they're supposed to get anymore. Like, the point or the escapism has run out.
Which I think is sort of the point. And then you have the anomalies like Lily and Tom, who just genuinely want the material possessions that badly.
Well, they want the material possessions that badly because they have the worst lives to return to. Like, it's kind of implied that, like, the reason they pursue the materials is almost like a fake goal, because what they really want more than anything is to just not be living their real lives. And the more people had to live for, the more willing they ultimately were to go back home. Like, that's kind of what Jacintha said. She's like, I just have a real life and I need to go back.
Yeah. That was the other thing. Like, it told you the passage of time, and it had been a long time, but it was hard to feel that passage of time. I don't know how you fix that because it's a short book, but.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, you get to, and you're like, oh, it's winter. Oh, they've been here a very, very long time.
Yeah. Like, suddenly it's getting cold. I'm like, wait, what?
I do think the book struggles more with that in the end. I think the boredom element does help, because it feels like, at least to me, it felt like time was passing when there was just, like, nothing to do. They're just bored. It's just like, you know, it's like that feeling of summer vacation when the days just kind of roll by.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's talk about the beginning of the end. With Becca, Tom, Andrew, and Lily. And Becca has somehow foreseen that they were going to shut the water off, or feared it was going to happen, and has stored away water in the maze. And they're trying to outlast the boys, but they're all, like, literally dying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is one of the more fucked up parts to me, because you could really feel, at least to me, how much they were really torturing each other. Like, this book in this Final Four era particularly made me think of that, like, Albert Camus quote. Maybe it's someone else, but whatever. I don't have time to think about it. It's hell is other people.
Mm.
And at this point in the show, that's really what it comes like. They're actually just torturing each other. And Lily's indifference instigates Tom an insane amount. Andrew is likewise extremely irritated by Lily's, like, negativity. They're all just, like, so poorly matched as a group that it really, like, put me on edge. And I knew Lily and Becca were trying to work together, and Tom was just obsessed with, like, keeping them prisoner, that I was like, it was like reading a prison break to me. I was like, oh my gosh, you have to get out of this house. Like,
yeah. And that's where then she, like, survived it all. I was like, hey, I can stay longer. And you're like, what? I don't know. That's where it got wild. But that's also where I got less interested, because then it was just not even like the kind of suspense.
And it just fell off a cliff.
Straight up violence.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was still interesting when Lily used Tom's fears to, like, lock him out of the house or whatever.
Yeah.
And then blinded him and then just cried about it. I was like, excuse me? And Andrew never knew any of this happened. She goes, oh, Tom said to tell you goodbye.
Yeah.
That was the peak of the book to me. That was when I was at, I felt like the book was at its most crazy.
Yeah, I agree. It just fell off a cliff right after.
Yeah, I mean, I do think the one choice in this book I would critique a little bit is I think she could have brought the conflict between Lily and Tom to a higher crescendo. And I think the consequences could have been a little bit more exciting than just sort of like continued apathy or like distance from everyone. But I really liked the final conflicts too. I liked the math question. I really liked that Lily kind of like actually schemed and like fought for something. It's just that then when she got what she thought she wanted, it was boring and it didn't solve any of her problems.
It was also then when Andrew like bashed his head against the wall because he's like, the producers will take care of us. I was like, I don't know where we're going now.
Yeah.
Because he never talked about what the producers did.
They gave him like speed or something.
Yeah. And this monument that was insane. He's like, and that's the other thing that I had a hard time grasping is their desire to make the compound so good for the next people. I was like, why? I thought it was about you guys. Why do you care what the next people see?
To me, that did make sense to me, partly because the more you watch Love Island, the more you can tell that seasons kind of do interact with each other. And in the show, the contestants inherited the villa that the other contestants left behind. So to me, it did kind of make sense just as a logic of like everyone who entered the show wanted to be on the most epic season. Like, and part of that was amassing great fortune and working together and like doing something notable. And I kind of liked the whole monument thing because I think it did emphasize how to Andrew, the isolation aspect of the show had really gotten him to the point where he kind of felt like this was the only thing that existed. And if this is the only thing that exists, then the producers are gods because they're the ones who ultimately control the events of the show.
I don't know. It's just the fact that like, I guess I couldn't feel Lily's terror when Andrew was trying to harm her because she was so apathetic after the Tom thing. I was like, are you really scared? Are you? Do you care? But I just had a hard time buying in from Lily's point of view.
Mm.
Like, it wasn't scary to me. She was just going to be fine and be like, okay, next.
Fair enough. I mean, it is kind of what she did.
Yeah, pretty much.
I do think it would have been nice to get a little more from Lily at the ultimate end of things. But I do think it kind of also does like emphasize the point that I think Lily wanted the show to heal her, almost like My Year of Rest and Relaxation. Like, if you get a long enough break from your life, you will be ready to do it again. And I think what the show reflected is that, or what the book reflected is that you have to actually change your values and the way you're living your life to get that result. It's not about like escapism. And so it was like, as long as Lily was still obsessed with the sort of like vapid materialism, she would not have that like lust or passion for life.
Her willingness and lack of fear to pull a sled full of both her and Andrew's stuff through the desert, I fear there was no change later on.
None, which is sad.
Yeah. She only left because Sam left her that message. And then her mom's phone call was depressing. And she was like, I'm done being alone, but I'm going to take all of the materialism with me.
Right. And also like, Lily never learns to fight for herself or to fight for her life. No. The only fight you get out of her in the book is fight to stay in the villa so that she can continue avoiding her life and continue amassing possessions.
Really, the one big question I wanted answered at the end is who called her name and was waving at her? who was there? Who showed up for it? Was it the producers? Was it Sam? Was it Andrew?
I think it was just the producers.
Who actually valued Lily? I don't know. That was the one cliffhanger that I was like, I would like to know that one.
I think it's the producers.
I hoped
in my heart that it was Sam. Mm-hmm. Because I thought if it was Sam, that does mean better things for Lily in the future, hopefully.
I think maybe it was Andrew waiting to get his stuff.
Maybe. It could be there. Because I don't really know who it would be. Again, maybe Catherine Dright, maybe producers.
Maybe she hallucinated it in the desert and never
died.
Exactly.
Maybe it was all just a dream.
Maybe it was that other contestant who never made it.
Killing the crew as they make their way out of the villa.
I also the other just, people who's been wandering around since they left.
Yeah, I just assumed that like the producers killed off the contestants as soon as they left the
villa. Okay, see, I kind of thought people would end up dying.
Yeah. Say it.
Like when you told me like Lord of the Flies meets Love Island, I thought people would die.
Yeah, I thought it was Hunger Games.
No, not quite that drastic.
I thought Andrew would actually die of dehydration and then be like, oops.
I thought he would actually bash his head in.
Yeah, like if anyone, I thought Andrew would die. I thought Becca maybe could have been drowned in the pool, you know, like.
Right.
I thought there would be more serious repercussions than what there even was.
Yeah. And I get that. I think to me, I still liked it because it felt more connected to our present day, where a show would never let someone die, but they would absolutely, like, people do starve, like, drastically on Survivor. They do allow people to be in situations that damage them mentally forever. Like, people who leave Love Island do end up committing suicide. And, like, I'm not saying the show is the reason for that, because, like, I don't know those people and I don't know their full stories, but, like, shows will not let people die because that's the most obvious red line in the sand, but that doesn't mean they won't let them get like fucked up right to that point. And like, I think Andrew's the best example because he's like genuinely not okay. He will probably never be okay again in his life. And the show was going to defend that because like he was physically okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one thing they were missing was bringing up someone's racist tweet from like 2010.
Yes.
And then getting other people to vote them off for that or removing them.
Having Jacintha read it out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
To fully give the full picture.
Right. Last year on the US ones, people were disappearing from their beds left and right because they found out they were all racists.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, basically all this book inspired me to do was go watch more Love Island. So
yeah.
So rampant consumerism, we're gonna continue it.
It's such a great show to put on and do other things. And then you're just like, these people are crazy, but I'm watching it. So
I think that's my mom with all of the Real Housewives.
Reality TV is the same thing as going to a zoo.
You're correct.
Yeah.
Except as a human zoo.
I have a very passionate argument that all reality TV is actually an anthropological, like, sociological study.
The people on Love Island are a different species from me. They're interesting to observe.
Yes.
I also think, like, you just get to see, like, everyday situations, like cheating, play out in real time. And everyone is actually being filmed.
Well, part of it is you thinking, I wouldn't handle that way. Why would you say that?
Right.
You don't know what you'd do in the moment.
Yeah.
No.
I know I wouldn't question a lime as an avocado.
Right.
You're smarter than that.
Right. Even I know what Brexit is.
But speaking of, would you ever go to the compound, A, or B, ever go on a reality TV show? I feel like I know the answers for both of you.
It's the other reason I had a hard time. It's just like, yeah, I like some nice things. But to an extent, like, I'm very conscious of my budget and things. So, like, I didn't relate to the characters at all wanting these things. So, like, no, I wouldn't go to the compound. I don't.
Would I go to the compound? No. Because material gain is also not enough incentive for me. However, I'm a big enough reality TV fan that I do really wonder sometimes about the actual experience of living it. I wish I could do like a simulation of it without actually doing it in real life. Also, I'm so far, I feel, from the kind of person who would actually get recruited for a show like this. Partly because I have like almost no social media and am not willing to wear a bathing suit every day or put on makeup every day. And so I cannot ever imagine myself actually going through with it. However, I do feel a strong curiosity for like going on a show like this just to experience it. Like if I'm kicked off first, that's fine with me. I just kind of want to know what it's like behind the scenes.
I want to go on Below Deck, but not as a yachty, as a customer. Yeah. And then the chef would be cursing like, this girl, she won't eat the seafood. She's requesting chicken tenders. And that's the reality TV experience I would like.
Yeah. I would love to be a producer on a reality TV show to witness the behind the scenes.
God, that sounds like
cool. Yeah, you have to be evil. You have actually, to like.
I would have loved to be a producer on Taylor Frankie Paul's season of The Bachelor.
Yes. I agree.
I shake my head. Because guys, producers are the evilest ones. They're the ones who like create the situations and create the story arcs. And
I'm aware. I'm
the very Secret aware. Lives of Mormon Wives producers, evil.
Yes.
Yeah.
So evil. Aware. I would want to do it. Like if I was going to choose between being on the show or being a producer, I'd choose being a producer every single day because of similar reasons for like Casey. Like I just don't do my makeup enough. Like I do it once a month. Like you're not going to catch me in a bathing suit either. And I'm too pale for
maybe
that.
Maybe you catch me on like Wheel of Fortune.
Well, that's a game show, not reality TV. Like, yeah, catch me on Jeopardy. I'll do Jeopardy any day of the week.
I used to be a religious watcher of all the Bachelor franchise things. That was one of those things COVID kind of knocked out of me. But I used to like imagine how I would handle things and be like, well, if I went on the show, but like realistically, I'm a foot too short and a few pounds too heavy. I'd never get cast. You know what I mean? Like saying that very practically, like unrealistic standards of beauty. I can acknowledge that other people maybe can't as easily. But I don't know. I love then looking the people up later and seeing how they crash and burn. It's so fun.
But you don't want to be the one crashing and burning.
Oh, right. I would rather be a contestant than a producer because I feel like the contestants are like kind of morally blameless because they're just like doing their best. Whereas the producers are literally like fucking with people and trying to get them to break down on purpose, which is so much worse.
Contestants probably do have a little fun.
Yes.
Right.
I can believe the contestants have a little fun.
Like, oh, dang, you did a helicopter ride through the Swiss Alps with a hot man? Bummer.
Right. And your job is to be entertaining, but once you're on the show, they can't actually force you to be entertaining.
Actually, you're going to call this a game show too. I would kill to be on The Traitors.
That's a game show.
Yeah.
But sort of.
That's kind of right in the middle.
It's a game show with reality TV stars as the stars.
The OG version was real people.
There is a real real person version.
It's just, it is about relationships and stuff. It is.
Yeah.
I agree. It's closer.
A fascinating show.
I would do the Traitors as well.
That is my favorite reality TV show. And yes, I would go on there just to meet Alan Cummings and Lola the dog.
Yeah. You get to live in Scotland in a castle and you get to play a game of mafia in real life.
And like, even if I got eliminated early, like I would have met Donna Kelsey. Like,
I would do Love Island in my fantasy world, planning to be eliminated very quickly. And I would also do Love is Blind, believe it or not. Again, not planning to get engaged at all. But I am so desperately curious to live this experience because the way these contestants talk about it is so crazy. I just feel like I need to fact check them. Yeah, it's just so, they're so crazy.
Actually, you know what I want to do? I want to meet the therapists of the people who come out of the show.
That could be its own reality show.
It should be.
I think there is a reality show that's like couples therapy and it's just literally couples therapy sessions.
I've seen couples therapy.
Yeah.
It's like extremely good, but it's like highbrow. Like it's actually like well-made real therapy. Like the point is not to mock people. It's to like make deep observations about relationships, you know, like Love Island is a different kind of show.
Yes. Also, if you want this,
and I hope I'm never on couples therapy because that means my relationship is on its last legs.
If you want this in a different setting, sort of the opposite sort of setting, I watched like two seasons of The Circle. Not really interesting.
That actually, I would do The Circle because you don't actually have to interact with people except for over.
It's interesting. It's like the opposite where it doesn't matter at all what you look like.
Yeah. Right. You get to catfish people.
But it still does.
Yeah.
I don't know. Reality TV. Sorry. Big fan over here.
Yeah. I'm a fan. Maybe I wouldn't be a producer. Maybe I would be a production assistant where I just give people coffee, but I get to witness it.
Fair enough.
I want a low stakes witnessing of it. Cause yes, I agree that the experiment of reality TV is so fascinating and everyone wants to look behind the curtain.
Well, it's not real. Right. We have plenty of show recommendations. So what about book recommendations?
I'm looking through my list right now.
I mean, it's kind of similar to Yesteryear of the characters themselves.
Yeah.
So I'll say Yesteryear.
Some of the similar themes, similar relevancy to right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to say The Future.
It's a good one.
That's a good one.
Similar, but not. Also, all unlikable characters who are all just trying to like survive in a world that sucks. Heavy on wealth, but not for normal people.
Yeah. I think I am going to recommend both I Who Have Never Known Men, that one, because it's also like sci-fi dystopia. Kind of an unlikable narrator with also a lot of just sort of like empty space, like very short kind of book. And I'm also going to recommend a book I mentioned earlier, which is My Year of Rest and Relaxation, which I had a lot of
complicated. I recommend that book to anyone ever, by the way.
I recommend it thematically.
That's cruel and unusual.
I was about to say I had a lot of complicated feelings about that book. I think I gave it 3.5 stars.
I feel like you gave it 4.
Oh, we can look it up right now. Let's see.
I'll find it. It was given 4 stars by Casey.
Period.
Yeah, it was 4 stars.
Two by Catherine, 1 by Caitlin.
Yeah.
So anyway, I did like the book. I did have complicated feelings on it, but it's similar sort of like consumerism, lack of meaning, person just wants to escape their life instead of dealing with it.
And then 9/11 happens.
Yeah, and then 9/11, spoiler.
I totally blocked out like all of that.
Yeah. I would say I enjoyed the book and disliked the ending. which we talked a lot about on our podcast episode, which you can all listen to.
Okay. Well, that was a fun discussion. Lots, even no matter what you think about this book, there's a lot to discuss in this book. Highly recommend for a book club.
Yeah.
We could have gone even further, probably. But those are just our opinions. Please share your opinions with us. Let us know what else you want to see on the pod, what's trending. Sometimes we, you know, get stuck in our little genres on our own social medias. So, like, help us branch out. But yeah, you can find us anywhere at Busy Girls Pod for all the social medias, busygirlspod.com when you want to see the book recommendations. And that is it for today, I think.
I think you're right. Okay, so thanks for listening, guys. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. Thanks for listening. When you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.